Welcome to the program, Meetings, Steps, Sponsorship, Service, and Prayer Workshop of WCNA 34. Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, I've asked Ray C. from Texas to read Who is an Addict?
Hey, Ray. What's up, Ray?
How are you? My name is Ray, I'm an addict. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. Thank you.
Okay, I have asked Missy B. from Texas to read What is the NA Program?
I'm an addict. My name is Misty. What is the NA program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
And I have asked Steve H. from Wyoming to read a portion of our literature.
I'm Steve. I'm an addict. It works how and why. Step one. We are never immune from having our lives become unmanageable, even after years of recovery. If problems pile up and our resources for coping with them dwindle, we may feel out of control and in too much pain to do anything constructive for ourselves. We feel overwhelmed by life, and that feeling seems to make everything worse. When our lives seem to be falling apart, we reapply ourselves to the basics of the NA program. We stay in close contact with our sponsor, work the steps, and go to meetings. We surrender again, knowing that victory lies in the admission of defeat. The feeling of love and acceptance we find in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous allows us to begin recovering from our addiction. We learn a new way to live. The emptiness from which we suffered is filled through working and living the 12 steps. We learn that our addiction is being addressed in all its complexity by this simple program. We have found a solution to our hopelessness. There is a deeply spiritual nature to our program of recovery. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous will take us on a journey that will far exceed our expectations. Working and living the steps will lead us to a spiritual awakening. Step one is the beginning of this spiritual journey. To get started on this journey, we must become willing to surrender to this program and its principles, for our future hinges on our willingness to grow spiritually.
Okay, at this time I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Liz S. from Sweden.
Hi, Okay, I'm Liz. I'm an addict. And I'm really nervous. And really glad to be here. I'm originally not from Sweden. I'm from Missouri. I am. Yeah. And I know Missouri's in the house. But I also know Sweden's in the house. So I got to tell the whole truth. Yeah, so I want to say thank you for asking me to speak. I had no idea that somebody turned in my speaker tape. So thank you to the committee. I've been on convention committees before, and it takes a lot of work. I've never actually done like a world convention, you know, like this, but I can't imagine. You know, a lot of people are working hard so that we can have a good time. So thank you for that. And so I wanted to say that, and I also wanted to say that I love NA, and I know that I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, but I can't say that I was like that when I first got clean. So I just keep it real simple. I used. That's it. And I used a lot of things, and that's enough, okay? But and it wasn't just drugs, okay? I used men, too, okay? That's part of my story. I will say that. And anything to take me outside of how I felt about myself, okay? So I did everything, you know, that we do, too, when we use, okay? Committed crimes and destroyed relationships and hurt a lot of people, but most of all myself. And that's it, okay? The first time I heard about Narcotics Anonymous, now I'll get to the reason why I'm here is to share about the program. First time I heard about Narcotics Anonymous, I was 18 years old, and it was in, 1996. In St. Louis, Missouri, I was living. And it wasn't because of the World Convention, I think, was going on there at that time, actually. I just graduated high school. I had committed a felony the year before. I was on probation. And, I dropped dirty. I was using. And they tested me for it. And they said, you need to go to treatment. And so they did an evaluation on me. I lied. So I went to my dad's cushy little insurance-paid treatment. It was outpatient. And this guy came in, and he was a member of NA, he said. And it was horrible. And it was my first experience of hearing about NA. And the reason why it was horrible was that this guy came in, and he shared about his using only. And he shared about a particular drug, and it sounded great to me. And I went out that Memorial weekend in 1996, right after that, and I used that drug because he made it sound so good. So that's why I think it's really important that we don't talk about drugs in here, like what kind we use, because I wanted to use it, and I did. So that was the first time I heard about NA. And then I heard about sponsorship the first time, too, because he contacted my therapist and asked my therapist for my phone number so that he could call me. And I said, okay. So he called me at home, and he said, can we meet at the Parkmore, which was a restaurant in St. Louis? And it's not there anymore. I think a Walgreens is there. And we can talk about sponsorship. You know, and I was like, oh, sponsorship. Okay. But I never showed up. I blew him off. And I thought, and that was my first impression. We talk about drugs in here, and men sponsor women. Okay. So anyway, so later on, after committing another crime, I was 21, and I got this great opportunity. I didn't think it was great at that time to go inpatient at this treatment facility. No, not inpatient, but go to this treatment facility. And then I got to a real H&I meeting, and I was still using, okay? But it was a real H&I meeting, and there was two women, because it was the only women treatment facility, that came in, and this one of the women helped lead the meeting, and the other one shared her story. And that woman shared about how she lied so much that she believed her own lies. Then I knew I was an addict. And ever since then, at that point, even though I was still using, that weekend afterwards, because it was a Wednesday night, I remember, I went out, and that whole weekend afterwards, I couldn't get high enough because I knew I was an addict. So then I got honest. I came in. I didn't care if I was going to jail, and I told the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God, right? And they freaked out, and they said, oh, do you have a safe place to stay tonight? Because we're going to take you and put you inpatient tomorrow. And I said, yeah. So then I went inpatient, and I've been clean since. I've never had to relapse. Thank God. But that was March 7th of 2000. So, yeah, I have almost 11 and a half years clean. And, so that was the beginning of my journey, really. And what had happened was that in this place, I was able to go to meetings. The women had to come pick us up and take us to meetings. And I loved NA. I loved going to NA because I could identify with what people were saying. And then we had another H&I meeting come in. And there was a group of women. And my first real sponsor who's here today was part of that group. And it was a question and answer. So if we had any questions about NA, we can ask. So I had the question of, can a man sponsor a woman? You know, and somebody was like, who asked that question? I was like, me, you know, and then, no, I mean, it's not recommended, you know. So anyway, later on, what had happened was that there was a lady that was working at the treatment facility that everybody was afraid of because she saw right through our stuff because she was an addict too. And she told us, she would teach a class on Saturday mornings, and she would just be like, you can't pull nothing on me. I'm an addict just like you. You can't get away with anything. You're going to see me at an NA meeting. I can't say hi to you because I work here, but you can come talk to me. And she scared me. And so I was always really honest with her because I was actually afraid of her. And then I told her, yeah, you know, so she was just like, and I'm looking after you. And she would tell me that. Because I was the youngest one at that time. I was 21, which is nothing now, you know, really, at that Columbia, Missouri, getting clean. But at that time, it was young. And she's like, I'm looking at you. And I was like, okay. So anyway, so I asked this lady who had the most clean time, because I thought, she's got the most clean time. She's picking me up and taking me to meetings, you know. She can sponsor me. So I asked her. She was like, oh, I've been waiting for you to ask me this question. Okay, so she sponsored me, but she never worked steps with me. And I told this lady in the treatment facility, because she was always on me, and she'd be like, you got to sponsor Liz, because you're going to die. Well, that's how we were taught, you know? And I was like, die? And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, you're going to die. If you don't get a sponsor, you're going to die. So I told her, I said, yeah, I got this lady. And she goes, who? So I told her, and then she goes, you better make sure she works steps with you, because if you don't work steps, you'll die. So I was like, okay. So by that time, I was already just going to outpatient treatment, and I was living in a recovery house, and one of the most stupidest things I could have done, which I don't recommend, but I did it, okay? I called my old dope dealer, because I needed to use a man to drive me around because I was too good enough to ride the bus. And that's what I did. And one day, I spent the night with him, and I was going home, and I was clean, you know, not working any steps, had a sponsor, but was clean. And I had almost 30 days or something like that, a little bit over 30 days. And he said, before I take you home, I need to do something. And he pulled out this magical, wonderful yuck. And and I said, oh no, you know, and I stepped outside, and then I knew, like, it was the first time I actually felt powerless, you know, like I had been clean, but I never felt that before. And so I knew, I was like, man, I need to do something here. Otherwise I'm going to die. Like that lady said, you know? And so what I did was, I went home and I deleted his phone number and I called my sponsor. Yeah, that was hard. And I said, I think I need to work steps. And she was like, let me come and get you. And she was late. She was always late. except to take me to a meeting. She was always late, and she came and got me. And we went to a pool, and we just sat outside in the sun. And I said, but don't I need to work steps? They keep talking about these steps in these meetings. And this lady in the treatment facility says, I'm going to die. And she was just like, yeah, and that's it, you know. So then I went back to this treatment facility the next time I had to go back, and this lady that was working there asked me, how's it going? And I told her the whole truth. You know, I told her this whole experience that I just had, and she goes, that's it. She's not sponsoring you no more. And she said, I'm going to get you a real sponsor. Okay? She said, I'm going to introduce you to a sponsor that's going to work steps, and it's going to change your life and make you live. And that's what she said to me. And she introduced me to this lady that's here today. Yeah, she's my first real sponsor. And I didn't ask her right away. I waited until we had some pork in the park activity. And I was, like, really scared. And, you know, of course, I had a man already at that time, you know. And I was with him, and I was really, really scared. And I asked her, and she was like, yeah, but you got to do some things. She agreed to it, but she told me what to do. And I had to call her every day. I had to go to as many meetings as possible. And I had to get the literature. And I had no money. I had no money when I got clean, so it was given to me. Some guy went to the Salvation Army and bought my first basic text with a quarter and gave it to me. I mean, miracles happened because everything just came together for me. And she told me, she said, you got 2 weeks to get step one done. And I was like, what? I mean, there's a lot of questions in there, you know. But I had too much time on my hand, you know. So I needed to do that. And I appreciate her so much, so much. And so I did that. I did what she said for a long time. And I went to as many meetings as possible. And she told me, she said, you got to get a home group. My first thing of service, right? It all starts at home with the home group. And so I picked this meeting. It was Monday night. I think it starts at 7:30 still. Yeah, Freedom Group on Monday night, Columbia, Missouri, 10th and Walnut. I still remember. And it was my home group for a long time. And I served that group in many ways. I remember I didn't even have a year clean. They gave me a key. And they said, you can set up and do the coffee and, you know, somebody else will lead the meeting. And I remember, you know, that first year clean, you know, my sponsor was great to me at that time because she really allowed me to be a newcomer. Okay. She really allowed me, you can do whatever you want. Just don't pick up. I don't care. Just don't pick up. And she took me underneath her wing and she told me what to do and I listened. And it saved my life. And I'm really grateful for that. So what had happened for me was, is that after, you know, coming to an A, and I started working steps and my life became great. And one of the things I do like to share about is that by about 3 years into the program, I became what's called cocky. Because by that time, I had worked all 12 steps, and I knew everything, right? I did. And I knew how to do it. You know, I've been to area. I knew how the service structure was starting to work and how we should work it better and how my home group should do things better. And I got real cocky. And it's a dangerous place to be because what happened to me was that I knew it all, so I couldn't be taught anything. And I got so cocky that I became so judgmental against these old-timers and these people, you know, in the fellowship that saved my life in the beginning that I just wanted to push away. And I got to this point where, you know, it just became too much. And I started acting out on some wonderful, lovely newcomer get into a relationship behavior. And it almost took me out. And unfortunately, it took him out. And I don't know where he is today, but I know that it took him out. And I have to live with that guilt, but it is what it is. And I had to change sponsors too, because I couldn't even get honest with my sponsor. And that's a problem. And so that relationship with my sponsor totally changed. And she had sponsored me. My first sponsor had sponsored me for like 4 years, almost, yeah, 4.5 years around there. And so that changed. And I got another sponsor. And eventually what had happened was is that I got so humiliated, then I got humble. And I realized, and I'm still realizing, is that we're not perfect here, but our word means a lot. Like, I can't sit there and tell my sponsees to do something if I'm not doing it. Like, I truly believe that. You know, and that's the reason why I said yes today, because when the World Convention was in Barcelona, one of my sponsees who's in Sweden was asked to share, and she was like, I'm not going to do that. And I said, yes, you are. And I didn't say yes right away to this, you know. I emailed my sponsor, who's here today also, which is awesome. I emailed my sponsor, and then I waited for her. And she said, I just told them that they asked me to share, and she emailed back and said, great, can't wait to hear you. So then I knew I had to say yes. And then I told my sponsee that, you know, shared in Barcelona. So I was like, okay, so I got to do this, right? So anyway, I believe that our word means a lot. And if we don't live by our word, then we don't stand for anything. And that's what had happened to me. I became so cocky, nobody could teach me anything, and then I acted out. And it was horrible, and it became like this division where I was from. Either you believed him or you believed me. And that's not cool. And so when I realized that was going on, I stepped back completely. And it got to a point where, I grew out of that. Yeah, I hope so. You know, I grew. And I really wanted to do some service, you know. And so I talked to my sponsor at that time, and I told her, I said, you know, I really want to do this regional committee member service. And I said, but I think you have to learn the traditions, right? And she said, yeah, Liz, look, I'll teach you the traditions. Why don't you just go for it? And so I did, and it was one of the greatest experiences for me. Because when I was doing that service, what had happened to me was that I became very, very little opinionated. And I think that's really important, because I only shared my opinion with my best friend and with my sponsor. And I didn't even like sharing it with my best friend, because she had a lot less clean time, and I didn't want my opinion to determine how she views things in Narcotics Anonymous, so to speak, you know. And so when people would ask me about certain things, it was either based on information that I had gotten. If I didn't see it or if I didn't hear it, I don't have anything to say, okay? And I try to do that today to the best of my ability. I don't want to hear about other people's stuff, you know. I really don't. And I don't want to gossip today. I don't want to hear about other people's stuff. I want to know how you feeling, how you doing, how I can help you. You know, I mean, really. And so that service position really helped me. And one of the great things about service, I have to say, is that I went to school. I worked full-time, went to school full-time. I don't know how I did it, to be honest with you, but I did. I wasn't an A student. I did recovery full-time, too. And I had a boyfriend always, you know, but that was like part-time, you know. But I always, that's the truth, though. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was the truth. I should have never been in a relationship, you know. I didn't have time for one. But anyway, you know, I did school full-time. I worked full-time. I did recovery full-time. Okay, so I had 3 full-time jobs. And what happened was that the service that I did in Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to sit down, be quiet in school, and take notes. Then it also gave me the courage to get up, stand up here, and do presentation in front of all my schoolmates. Then I could take that information when I became a professional worker, you know, after I graduated school. Then I could take those tools that I learned in service, and I could hold meetings, like business meetings, you know, with all these people. And I'm like, they have no idea who I am, you know. I mean, I think that takes a lot of courage, you know? And I mean, before I moved to Sweden, it was like I would be talking to doctors about what services where I worked I could provide for the doctors. You know, so it was kind of cool, you know. So anyway, so that's how service can not only help us personally, but also outside of the rooms too. You know, I use those tools outside. And the spiritual principles that I learned through the steps help me tolerate people a lot better. Let me tell you, because there was a lot that I think, and this is my head, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I think there's a lot of stupid people out there in the world. But I don't have to tell them that they're stupid. I can help them, right? So many, and they probably think the same thing about me. Really. So anyway, so that's how it all started, you know, and helped. Now, let's talk about Sweden. How I got to Sweden. I was, you know, I felt like I was really on the top of my game. I'm not going to lie, 2008, you know, I hurt some people before I moved to Sweden. There's two particular people that, you know, I was really afraid that I was going to see here, actually. I was really scared to come to the World Convention. And then it was cool because I prayed before I came over to registration. Like, I had this moment where I could lay down, pray, and meditate. And I came over to registration, and I saw my two ladies from Sweden working the registration booth. And then behind was my sponsor, and my current sponsor. And she's from Missouri. Well, she's from California. Let's get that right. But she lives in Missouri, and she was standing back there. And what happened was, is that I haven't seen her in years, even before I moved to Sweden, maybe a year before that. So, you know, I switched while I was living in Sweden. So when I saw her, the cleansing of seeing her, just the tears came. There's nothing like, I don't know if you guys know what it's like to be sponsored across the world, but it works for us. As much as I pick up that phone and we work steps and we talk, she does the same thing for me. And I truly believe that whatever you put into this relationship of sponsorship, you get right back out of it. It's the same thing, you know, all encompasses. You know, if you don't work the steps won't work for you. You know, it's the same thing. If you don't do service, you ain't going to get none. You know, and if you don't go to meetings, you won't get recovery. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. So I put a lot of energy into sponsorship, even with the sponsees that I have today, and even in the sponsor tree that I have in Sweden. I try really hard, even with having two little babies. And when I saw her, these tears just came. And I knew it didn't matter if those two people were here. I'm okay. I'm not that same person that I was when I left. You know, I'm a woman today. And I know I'm not that same person. I've worked some steps since then. And so I, two World Conventions ago, what happened was, is that right, yeah, I, you know, I was playing around. Yeah, that summer of 2008, I was doing some playing. And, you know, with some behaviors, you know, with men. I'm not going to lie. And what happened was, is I got sick of it. And it wasn't that I got, like, it wasn't like I got this big humiliation. It was on the inside. Not the outside. It was the inside. And then I saw, I have to tell this story. You know, I started praying, you know. And I've never had a problem praying, you know, before I got clean. Please get me out of jail. You know, please, you know, let this, you know, I'll be honest. Please let this HIV test come clean. You know, I don't want that. Or please let me be okay. You know, I didn't have a problem with praying. But when things are good is when I have a problem with praying. And I had gotten to this point where I just didn't want to be that same girl. You know, I was working in a professional field where I was working with the elderly. And I would see these old people, you know, like some, they didn't marry anybody or they would be alone. And I thought, man, I don't want to be alone when I get old. I want some kids. I was 29 and I thought, you know, I at least want to try to adopt. And then somebody told me how much that cost and I was like, oh, forget it. Yeah, forget it. Because I didn't have the money. And then I just thought, I'm done. I'm done playing the game. I'll wait till the rest of my life. Okay. And so what happened was is that San Antonio, Texas, World Convention is what happened for me. I just kind of surrendered, and this guy was just kind of standing around staring at me. And so I approached him, and we became friends and lovers. And he's Swedish. And so we started this, you know, communicating almost every day on the phone. And I said, well, I'll get my passport. You know, I've never left the country, and I'll go meet you, you know, Thanksgiving weekend. And during the time period of when I first met him until Thanksgiving weekend of, yeah, like 2008, what happened for me was is I had moved to Kansas City, basically, because I was working in Kansas City primarily. And I was living in this apartment. And I had a house in Columbia, Missouri, and it had nothing in it. Nothing. And I was basically, my roommate, she was also from Columbia, Missouri, and it was, yeah, she was a nurse. And so, you know, we had this apartment, and she was like, are you okay, Liz? Because you don't have any furniture here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. You know, she'd been in my house in Columbia, but I didn't want anything. And so what happened was, is I got with God. And I did a lot of praying, and I wanted to act out so bad. And it wasn't with drugs. It was with men. And I wanted to contact these two men so bad. But I didn't do it. Every night I prayed and I meditated and I cried those tears. And I just did it. And I worked out. I went to meetings. No excuses. Was my home group in Kansas City. Yeah, that was my home group. And it saved my life. Those people were so nice to me there. They're here today, obviously. But anyway, and so, you know, I went there, and I let things go. You know, nobody, you know, if people wanted to judge me, I had to let them go, you know, because I don't need people to judge me today. You know, I don't need your validation. And so, and I just got real with me, and I went to Sweden, and I visited, and then he came here, and I kept working, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I talked to my sponsor at that time, and eventually what happened was is I filed for a residency permit, like a green card, and to live there, and I got granted it, and we made a decision to, you know, have a baby, and I got pregnant before... You know, and before I moved there, so I was a couple months pregnant when I showed up. And, okay, so Sweden. You got to tell me when it's time. So what happened for me was, is everything just kind of like laid out the pathway for me. And so I moved to Sweden. And I thought, you know, if my higher power didn't want me to be there, it wouldn't be so easy. You know, something would happen. And I remember praying, and I said, God, please don't let me just move to Sweden for some man. I didn't want that to be the reason. I want to do your work in Sweden. And I remember specifically praying for that. And I was still trying to communicate with the sponsor I had at that time, and it wasn't working. And this guy came up to me at a meeting, because I shared a lot about the traditions. And this guy, D, I call him D, that's my dog, he came up, we're good friends. It's nothing sexual, you know, we're just good friends. It's my male friend in the program. And he came up to me and he said, Liz, I want to work the traditions. And I was like, okay, well, let me find somebody in Sweden. I got 7 minutes, okay. So anyway, so I he didn't want anybody in Sweden. So I connected him with this guy named Jay. From St. Louis, Washington, Missouri, St. Louis area. And I thought, and I told Jay, if I would want any man to sponsor me, and if I was a man, it would be you. So can you please help him? And I ended up sending him some emails, and his wife, who's my sponsor today, responded to my emails. And I got to tell you something. This lady has literally saved my life, like my first real sponsor, because there have been moments I don't want to use today, okay? I don't have that thought process in my head that's left me, okay? But what I will tell you is that I have had moments, like after I've given birth, where I've really had thoughts of harming myself. Yeah, you know how like women give birth and their hormones change and they go through that? That was me. And I didn't tell anybody. And I actually didn't tell her for a long time because I was scared. And I surrendered. And I looked at my baby, my firstborn, it happened to, and I just said, okay, Sebastian, whatever you want. I'm not going to do anything. And if my thoughts don't change within 30 days, then I'm going to get help. I'm going to tell somebody in NA. I'm going to tell my sponsor. And it changed. And I didn't want to get close to women in Sweden. And I didn't think they had anything to offer me. Crap. Because what happened was, is that my sponsor told me I had to hook up with this lady who actually was like, she's like the root in our tree. And it was a lady that I knew very well. And I found out that I have all these beautiful Swedish women in my tree. So we had this big sponsor tree gathering with 27 women in this lady's place, Swedish, you know. And we had this huge gathering, you know, and it was awesome. It was really awesome. And every meeting that I go to, like in Stockholm, I always see some woman that's in my tree. And then it's like then I felt more connected. And if it wasn't for my sponsor, you know, she called me during conventions, you know, like cabin fever, here, talk to these people, send me care packages, T-shirts signed for my hometown. I never felt more connected and at home in Narcotics Anonymous in Sweden if it wasn't for my current sponsor. And when I first moved there, I always remembered my first sponsor because she said, get a home group. So within 30 days of me living there, I got a home group. You know, so it was like those two women have helped me survive in Sweden. And then after finding out my sponsor tree, I'm still alive. And they helped me. So I think my time is up. But I just wanted to say, I hope you guys are having a good time. I love you all. And thanks for allowing me to feel very welcome here. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Liz. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Carl B. from Texas.
If you would, I want to ask you to join me in another moment of silence. As I always like to try to get this fool named Carl out of the way. If you're praying, people, I ask also that you pray along with me, that he allows me to say whatever it is he wants said this morning. But that above all, he would at least allow me to be able to say something. Just something that would be a benefit to each and every person here this morning. Thank you. I'm an addict. My name's Carl. I told a friend of mine, we were having coffee the other day. He said something that I thought was really important. I'm going to try to remember it, Felix. It don't suck to be us. And I bring that up because I had tears with my coffee Thursday morning. I was getting ready to make my deal. He had filled up my cup. And, you know, you pay these kind of rates for these rooms. They call you Mr. So he called me Mr. Barry. He let a dope fiend sign his name to charge the coffee to his room. It had a big foyer. Staying at the Hyatt, and I came in here, it's kind of the same way. You got this big majestic place and the marble floors, and I'm sitting here staying in a place that would have called security on me if I had walked in there 20 years ago. And so that's why when Felix said it don't suck to be us, because see, there's something still inside of me that cries out for failure, something that tells me I'm still not worthy, something that reminds me of the shame, guilt, and remorse that's still buried deep within. And so because of all that, I got overwhelmed. And I just had tears of joy because I was able to be here in San Diego, staying in a nice hotel, and somebody just called me Mister. Because the literature says all we ever wanted to do was feel good about ourselves. I felt pretty good. So at any rate, are there any newcomers in the house? If you got less than a year clean, please stand up. Okay. I was taught that you always recognize your dignitaries. And you guys are definitely dignitaries, the most important people here. When I registered for this convention, I had registered for the concert before I found out who was going to be at the concert. And in case y'all can't look at me and tell, I'm really not a Blue Oyster Cult kind of guy. So for that reason, any of those newcomers interested in two tickets to the Blue Oyster Cult? Well, I got one for each. In case y'all don't understand, oh, we got one more? One more over there. Blue Oyster Cult. Thank you, David. That's my friend David. Y'all pray for him. No, seriously, he's facing some serious illness and he can take and will use all the prayers you'll give him, right? All right. The reason I saved those tickets till this morning, it's because in case y'all didn't think about it, and some of them told them, this is why sponsorship is important. We're responsible for sponsorship. Somebody said, go take it. See, because there was a lot of people that raised their hand, give it to me. But see, recovery only happens when you get up and go after it. That was recovery. You got to get up and put your one foot in front of the other. That's why I think they call it steps. But you know, the program, see, I believe, and I'm going to apologize. Anything that I say that is incorrect, then forgive me. Because I done said a lot of stuff in the time I've been in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that I'm embarrassed about today. So, you know, I ain't perfect, and I'm just another bozo on the bus. So whatever I say, if you don't hear it, they say the problem with literature is language, and what we look for is a recurring theme. So if you're not hearing somebody else saying what I'm saying, don't pay no attention to me. But my book says that, and I believe that the program is not steps, or the fellowship. Narcotics Anonymous is not steps. It's not traditions. It's not concepts. It's a fellowship. Society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. But they said in this fellowship we work a program. He said, which is a set of principles written so simply, we can follow them in our daily lives. I believe that's steps and traditions. And so that's what we come in here to do. We come in here to work the program. But see, the thing that is the most important about the program for me is the meeting. It's one of the first places that's important. You know, and in the front of the book, it talks about the fact that simplicity is the key. You know, I ran into some friends of mine all over this convention, all from all over the country. And I do thank all of y'all that are here today that I know personally. Most of you guys, I got to get me a hug before I came up to share. And I just thank y'all for being here. Because, again, all I ever wanted to do was feel good about myself. But I'm unable to do that on my own. If you don't feel good about me, guess what? Yeah, I ain't going to happen. But see, when I ran into these different people, we hug, and that's what is called a meeting. We met. We came together. Isn't that what we do in this fellowship? Doesn't the fifth tradition say that the meeting is the most important thing we do? We come together, and I don't know about you, but I take people's inventory in the meeting. I listen to what you say, and I think about, Delinda, I think about what they need to do. What their sponsor needs to tell them. and what page number the solution is on. And I can stay in the course of that meeting. I can go around the room and listen to everybody share. And I have a solution for everyone in the meeting. Except I can't figure out why I'm there. I know what's wrong with you, but I don't know what's wrong with me. Guess what, y'all? That's why we have a meeting. See, our job is to come in there, to share who and where we are, listen to somebody else, the similarities and not the differences, and be able to leave out of there with a little bit of an inkling on what we might want to try to do next. So that's why I love the fellowship. You know, and I have opinions. I try not to share too many of them because they're like, you know what. But, you know, for a while there, and I think Lisa, it's Lisa, right? Liz, she did a great job, didn't she? Yeah, thank you. Liz talked about it. You know, I was most knowledgeable in Narcotics Anonymous at 3 to 5 years clean. I knew everything. My name was Yogi, and I was smarter than the average bear. And so, consequently, when I came into these meetings, I had these rigid ways that Narcotics Anonymous was supposed to work. And I knew what you needed to do and what you didn't need to do, and I would legislate. If you didn't watch out, I'd sniper share. That's what we call it. I'd tell you in the course of the meeting that what you was talking about didn't mean nothing. But see, what I've come to understand is, they told me, is that when you begin to know that you don't know, you don't know, only then will you begin to know. So I had to come in here and hang around just to find out I didn't know anything so that I could understand that I need to shut up and listen to you so that I might learn something. So that's why this fellowship is so important. And see, where I come from, there's some people that will tell you that on the basic text, page 34, second paragraph, third sentence, it says, and they'll interpret it for you, help you get on the right path, but they won't give you a hug after the meeting. And believe me, I'm not dissing the literature. Don't get this wrong. I believe in the literature, but I read in history the way I understand it. There was 9 years before we had a white book. There was 29 years before we had a basic text. What the hell did we use to recover before we had this literature? And I think it's fellowship. You know, I believe in the step working guide, and I use it sometimes. And I do. I mean that. I use it sometimes. But, you know, where I come from, the way I believe in sponsorship, is I really don't sponsor any two people the same way. Sometimes I use your notes. Sometimes I use my notes. Sometimes I use my highlighted book. Sometimes I use the step working guide. Sometimes I take somebody else I know to a step work and then let them work the step with my sponsee. Because I believe in a loving God. See, they can tell me that you can believe in God. And they told me that could be G-O-D, good orderly direction. Could be G-O-D, group of dope fiends. Could be the celestial creator, czar of the universe, which I believe in. I have my own, and I'm sure you have yours. But I believe in sponsorship, that it's important that I let God use me. And if y'all been around, I know there's enough people in this room. I know y'all understand what I'm about to say. You ever sit down across the table with the sponsee, and you start sharing, and some stuff comes out of your mouth, David, that you never heard before? You start sharing some stuff that you ain't even thought about before. And when you leave there, keep what you got by giving it away, you done had some luck. The guy you're working with may or may not got nothing, but you got something out of that deal. Because I believe when we sit down and we do this sponsorship thing, I believe that if I'm working a step one with Dennis, my friend out there, then I'm working step one too. Right? You know, I hear some people say that if you ain't working the steps and if you ain't done it after so long, you know, you've got a problem. And one of the guys that shared this was talking about how people with over 10 years clean, you know, don't work the steps like they should. But I didn't bother that. There's room for all manifestations. That's what my literature said. And he only got 6 years clean, so what he's saying don't bother me. You see what I'm saying? And I hope you understood what I'm saying, because it sounds like judgment, but it's not. That's discernment. That's my opinion. I've been here long enough to believe that what I think really ain't got to be right, but I got a right to think what I think. Ain't no sense in me lying. My true value is in what? Being myself. So I need to think what I think, just as long as I don't think I'm right. The steps. You know, my mother gave birth to me, and it said that she gave me life. And some of y'all have heard me share before. No, I tend to share and I tell my story in song. And one of the songs talks about the fact that it's your thing. You can do what you want to do. You know, and Bobby Brown had said it's your prerogative. You know, so consequently, I think it's my life. Like Frank Sinatra, I'm doing it my way. But see, what I came to understand is my mother gave me birth. The way I believe, that life was given by the Creator. So is it my life, or is it just something I've been given to use? See, what I had to come to believe, and I do believe this in this fellowship, the point about the steps is what I need to get out of my way. See, I need to take 12 steps to get out of my own way. Guess what? Once I take those steps, I'm also getting out of God's way. I don't know if y'all figure out what I'm saying, but this is my life, and I'm standing here, but I'm in the way. So I got to take 12 steps. Move out the way so God can come over here and stand and he can talk to y'all. Because whatever I got to say don't mean nothing. I'm just, I told you, another bozo on the bus. Okay? So, I just love this this topic. Man, I tell you what, when y'all gave me this topic, man, I thank you for having me. I thank you for asking me. But when you gave me this topic, I was just relieved and overwhelmed all at the same time. Because when you say the program, meetings, steps, sponsorship, service, and prayer, hell, I can share it till 9 o'clock tonight. Because, see, Narcotics Anonymous has given us a manner of living which can solve all of our problems. I'm not going to go in a closet back here, shut the door, and come up with no new ideas. Only way I'm going to go get some new ideas is I come to the meeting, I get a hug, and I talk to you, and I listen to what you say, and I meditate upon it. Let me repeat, I meditate upon it. But here's the problem. If you're new to this fellowship, you guys that stood up, get you a dictionary. Because if you're like me, you think you know everything and you understand the definition of all the world, but I don't think nobody stood up was named Funk or Wagnall or Webster. And what we think the words mean, that ain't what they mean. I'll give you an example. Meditation. Somebody said to Maya, said, the sky is blue. And I'd look at that and I'd think about it. She's talking in the meeting, right? And I'm thinking. Think about what I'm going to say. And I'm going to correct to Maya. Well, sometimes it's blue, but the clouds can come in and the sky will be gray. And early in the morning and late in the evening, the sky will be orange and reddish. That is not meditation. That's called debate. See, I looked up the word. It said, considering something from the author's viewpoint. What I need to do is to seek to understand rather than be understood and try to understand what she means by blue. Because there's so many hues of blue that if I don't sit up there and try to figure out what she's trying to tell me, I'll get lost in the argument in my own mind. Guess what? I was already lost. Why do I want to go into my own mind and stay lost? No. You know, song just popped into my head. It says, just a thought of you and I forget to do the little ordinary things, all that I ought to do. Says, you're living in a sort of daydream, happy as a king. But as strange as it might seem, to me, that's everything. The mere idea of you, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go, all till I'm near to you. See your face in every flower, your eyes in skies above. It's just a thought of you. Talking about the God that we love and we share, we get from Narcotics Anonymous. And see, the nice thing about it didn't say God, as I understand in my Lord and Savior, the Honorable Dr. Pepper. Because see, you can call your God whatever you want to call him in here. We ain't got to have a name for him. He ain't got to come from a certain religious background or a certain sect or a certain definition within the religious background. He's just a higher power. And he honors prayer. You know, it's important to pray, first of all, just so that I can identify what I really want. Because see, I'm a dope fiend. And if you're a dope fiend like me, you suffer from denial. You know what denial stands for? Don't even know I'm lying. Now, unless you have significant cling time. If you have significant cling time, it stands for don't even know I always lie. Because see, once I've been around here long, I thought I had a dope problem, and I come in here now, I'm dopeless, so now I ain't got no problem, right? But see, the problem ain't the dope, it's the dope that took the dope. What in the hell made you want to go take some poison? Did y'all do like I did? If I take another hit, I'm going to die. But at least I die high. When I first got down there and I sit down and had all that dope on the table, first thought was, what am I going to do when this runs out? I couldn't even enjoy myself. You know, it's something about being a dope addict. I don't know if y'all will agree with this, but, you know, I've seen people here from all over the world, and, you know, some of these people, you can look at them and tell they're not, you know. I saw some people, they were Oriental. I don't know if they were Chinese or whatever, but, you know, I went and gave them a hug. And I saw some people that were walking around. Guy, he was kind of big and burly. He had scars all over him. He had this, you know, blonde hair. But he looked like he wasn't from the United States, and he talked funny afterwards. I understood he talked funny. And there were some people behind him. They knew each other. He had on a badge. So, but the thing I'm trying to get to is, you know, it's something about being a dope fiend. You ever notice that you can look and you can see him and you say, yep, that's one of us? I don't know. I kind of think it's the pain that remains that's on your face. I don't know if you had that look before you took a hit. Or you got that look as a result of taking too many hits. But it's something about being a dope fiend. You know, and that's why, again, that meeting is just powerful. Because, see, I'm running into people. I was in the gym this morning. Boy, y'all look good. Y'all working out. Y'all taking care of yourself. And if you don't think that means something, think about the fact that if you were like me, where I used to hide out outside. Susan, my wife's here. Give her a hand. She's been with me for 41 years. I only been clean 17 years. So yeah, I know she's really sick. Yeah, I'm going to tell them the story, dear. I remember one time the Jamaicans captured me. So I told her she needed to get some money and put it in a coffee can and go down to Camp Wisdom and poke. And throw the coffee can out the car. Don't pull over because the Jamaicans will get you. But if you bring them the money and throw it out the car, they'll let me go. Is she sick or what? No, thank you, dear, for everything. Thank you. This prayer thing. Isn't it wonderful to be able to call on the czar of the universe and have a personal relationship, knowing he's going to do for you whatever it is you need? Now, I didn't say what you ask, because he got four answers. Yes, no, maybe, and are you kidding? So he's not going to always answer your prayers like you want him to. But I believe he will always answer your prayers. You know, and I want to tell you that my life has turned into something I never thought was even possible. Because I grew up as a child, the white kids jumped on me because they said I was black and had nappy hair. And the black kids, Tim, jumped on me because they said I was white and had curly hair. And the Mexicans didn't like me because I couldn't speak Spanish. Because they thought I was a Mexican that couldn't speak Spanish. My grandmother, who raised me, was my step-grandmother, and my daddy and my aunts and uncles said that she was just using you to hold on to our daddy. So the Mexicans and the white folks and the black folks and my aunts and my uncles and my grandparents, none of them liked me. So I used to think I didn't like nobody. I didn't believe that. But I had proof, I had evidence that I was unworthy. Didn't nobody like me? Didn't nobody want me? Didn't nobody claim me? So I looked around and I said, okay, I don't like none of y'all either. And tried to live my life by myself. So if you're a dope fiend just like me, you might not have been curly headed. You might not look like a Mexican, whatever. But there's something about you when you were a little child still affects you today. You were too short, too tall, too fat. Your nose was too big. Your legs was bowed. Your mama was this. Your daddy was that. Something was wrong with you. And if they catch you on a bad day and they say something about your big nose, you're going to hit them. But to see, it's that original pain that prayer can relieve me from. Because, see, like I said, I'm so glad that I have this life that I have. I spent most of my life, and I think probably if you look at your four-step history, we all do, spend most of our life dealing with fear. False events appearing real. Afraid of every daggum thing, right? And the thing about it is, for all my life, I've been afraid and unworthy. I've been blessed with a business. I went belly up 10 years ago in this same business. I went to bed one night and I woke up and all my bank accounts had negative signs in the red in front of them when I went to the computer. To this very day, every time I go to the computer in the morning to check the bank account, I get this little turning in my stomach. And I suffer from fear and worry and anxiety until I kept telling y'all about it. I kept calling people about it. I kept listening to somebody else's solutions. And they finally told me, said, well, Carl, if God wants you to go under in business, do you want to stay in business? Hell no. I don't want to fight with God. I don't know about y'all. I don't want my way over God's decision for my life. Right? What I've come up with here lately is I've been able, my wife is so happy. Ain't you, baby? She's so happy because she's been living with me worrying about stuff that most of it never happens. She's been living with me, and here lately I've been having these problems. There ain't nothing but opportunities. And I've been having these opportunities that I don't have to get into fear, worry, and anxiety about. I just simply pray, realize that God's in charge. Whatever you want, I'm cool. Do what I can just for the day and just leave the rest of it alone. Do you know that most of this stuff works itself out? I done had stuff happen here in the last 3-4 months that I would normally have spent days worrying about, and then after the days of worry, it would work itself out and I wouldn't have worried in vain. I'm just here to report. Pray and leave it with God. And you don't have to go through that anxiety. You don't have to go through that pain. You know, we worry about, I ain't got enough gas to go where I need to go. We worry about a lot of stuff, but you know, I hate it when, don't you hate it when your sponsees use your stuff on you? One of my favorite sayings is this. The guy calls me and he's upset and he's worried and he's frantic and everything is falling apart, and I just ask him a few questions. So, did they repossess your car? No, my car's outside. It's paid for. You ain't got no gas, though. Got some gas. They turn off the cable? No, I've got cable TV. Icebox is empty. No, I've got food in the icebox. What the hell's wrong? In other words, you know, I give you a real example, including me. They called me today, and they called me yesterday. I had to go in and outside of the Blues Jam brunch yesterday because I had 8 different calls from the business, and I almost got frustrated because I can't even enjoy myself at the convention because these people are bugging me at my business, and then it hit me. Thank God you got a business. I can choose to worry, or I can choose to be grateful. And if you're still having problems, they told me to find somebody else that you can help. In Narcotics Anonymous, we call that service. You ever been frustrated, anxious, bad relationship, whatever it was, and then you go to the treatment center and see some people that really got a problem? I ain't know about y'all, but a trip to the treatment center changes my whole perspective on life. Because I see me. See, a trip to the treatment center reminds me of where I've been. See, I told you, hang outside my own house. I remember one day I was hanging outside my own house, sitting on an anthill by the air conditioner. And the ants were red ants. They were biting me. But I knew I couldn't move around because my wife and my kids were moving around. They were getting ready to go to school and work respectively. And so I needed to sit there and be still. So I just sat there and let the ants eat on me until they left. Then I went to the back door and I broke out a window. I had a key. I broke into my own house. You know, because I had to have an alibi. I had to have an excuse. So I figured, that's pretty good. I'll break into my own house. I didn't think about the fact that I broke the window in. And then I went inside. I'm in my own house, tiptoeing around, looking over my shoulder, afraid I'm going to catch me stealing my stuff. I'm crazy. Evan, that's what's wrong with me. I'm crazy. But I have to go to the treatment center, y'all, to find out I ain't the only one. Do you know what's so wonderful about the fourth and fifth step? Because in the fifth step, you get to tell somebody some stuff you wasn't going to never tell nobody. And the fact that you tell somebody, you're going to find out that they did it too. And you just get some relief. You did? Man. See, if I had never told nobody, I would have thought I was the only one. And it's usually about sex. I'm going to be honest with you. It's usually about sex. If you're gay, you had heterosexual sex. If you're heterosexual, you had gay sex. Or you could be really sick like me. You could have sex with animals. Yeah, I had a toy Cocker Spaniel. Yeah, I know, it's pretty sick. But see, you know why I share that? Because most of my four-step will come out behind this podium. You know why I share that? Because somebody needs to hear that. Somebody needs to hear they wasn't the only one. This program of Narcotics Anonymous, set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily lives. It's one of the greatest gifts anybody could have. If you knew, you guys that stood up, stick around. You got to keep working it. It ain't going to be easy. Because see, when a rocket ship takes off, it burns 75% of its fuel to escape the Earth's atmosphere. But once it gets into space, it can almost coast. See, some of us been in this fellowship a long time. We didn't escape our own atmosphere, because that's the problem. And we can now coast. And I already told you, it's going to be 3 to 5 years just for you to start thinking, before your head pops out your butt, as they say sometimes. But eventually, this program will give you a life. Because see, what I was doing before I got here, I was sucking air, but I wasn't living. Go to meetings. They suggest 90 meetings in 90 days. Work the steps. You know, to me, the steps are kind of like sex. I got y'all attention now. And the reason I say that is simply this. How many of you guys remember when you first started trying to have sex? You remember where you was kissing in the movie theater? Didn't see no movie. You were kissing for 2 hours and 15 minutes. You know, because all you was going to get at that point was a kiss. And then you moved a little longer and then you got, to do some playing under the dress and whatever in the pants, you know, with or without help. And then you got to the point where you really got in the bed and you started getting down. How many of y'all were stupid enough when you got through and the foreplay was good, you decided that foreplay was good and you got up out of bed before you had sex? Anybody? Or were you smart enough even in the beginning to go ahead and consummate the sex act? Or maybe you were like me, and once you did have the sex act, you said, I'm going to do this again as soon as I get through. Right? Well, that's what working step three and stopping is like. Why in the hell you want to work steps and stop at foreplay when there are orgasms and multiple orgasms to be had? We call that steps and traditions, in case you don't understand. And no matter what you got, no matter how good it is, more will be revealed. It's going to get better. But guess what? You can't do it by yourself. You know why? Sponsorship, give this guy a hand. He's stupid enough to sponsor me. That's Terry. You know why sponsorship is important? Sponsorship teaches you how to have a relationship with another human being. It teaches you how to be honest and open with somebody and how to ask for help. Sponsorship will teach you how to live life. It will teach you how to get counselors. I have an NA sponsor. I also have a lawyer sponsor. I have an accounting sponsor. I have a religious sponsor. I got all kinds of sponsors today because I learned how to trust his fool. Now, why I call him a fool? Because he's a dope fiend too. And I got to remember that. Because sponsorship's a two-way street. Sometimes he honors me and he calls me and he tells me what's going on with him. That's what I got to do. But I'm going to tell you something. If you're new to this fellowship, I'm going to tell you something. There's more love down there at that convention center than you'll find anywhere on planet Earth. I believe that, Color. I know you know that. I love you. One of my favorite songs, I usually sing it when I share. Testifies to how great this love in Narcotics Anonymous is. And I'm going to close with this song. Because the love is better than I've seen at the family reunion. Better than I see Sunday morning at the church house. Better than I've seen with the Hare Krishnas down at the airport. This love is just something that I've never seen anywhere else. I needed the shelter of someone's arms. And there you were. Needed someone understand my ups and downs. And there you were. With sweet love and devotion. Simply touching my emotion. I just want to stop and thank you, baby. I just want to stop and thank you, baby. Well, well, how sweet it is to be loved by you. Second verse says, closed my eyes at night, wondering what it'd be like without you in my life. All the things I've done are just a bore. Things I've done, things I've done them before. But you brighten up all my days. Changed my life in so many ways. I just want to stop and thank you, baby. I just want to stop and thank you, baby. Well, well, how sweet it is to be loved by you. In closing, newcomer, this is what I want you to remember. You got a song especially for you. Because see where I come from, they told the newcomer that he needed to take the cotton out of his ears and stick it in his mouth. Sadie, I want to thank you for being Sadie. Y'all don't know her, but she deserves a hand because she's a soldier. A narcotic synonymous. She take people driving across the country, got a gang with her all the time. Got a powerful message, but more importantly, the steps she takes. The powerful walk. Because what you do speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you say. And you are one of my heroes. Give Sadie a hand for me. Newcomer, don't let nobody tell you to shut up. You know, they say that the advantage in the book says, it says that we look for all manifestations. Manifestations are parent to the symptoms of the mind. So if you can come up with it in Narcotics Anonymous, it belongs. And I'm going to tell you, some of you are going to tell you to shut up. I'm going to tell you to share. You know why? Because we're responsible for sponsorship when the newcomer gets here. So the literature says, while we're not yet comfortable with our new friends, we're not at home with our old friends anymore either. And sharing keeps us from feeling lost and alone. Do you really want to put a muzzle on the newcomer? So this closing song applies to all of us. It says, as you said it, I wasn't going to sing this song, but lean on me. When you're not strong, and I'll be your friend, I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. You just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. I'm an addict. My name's Carl. I keep coming back.
Oh, Liz and Carl, that was amazing. One more hand for Liz and Carl. Okay, before we close, I have asked John Jay from Oregon to come up and read We Do Recover.
My name is John, and I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to all of us. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah.